Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. You'll be glad you did.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Into the 7 o'clock hour we go, Payne and Pendergast. Will Anderson met with the media yesterday. And
2 days ago.
2 days ago, yeah. Feels like yesterday.
I know, you're a little bit in that mode, I know, that, which is fine, because you were thinking about yesterday's Astros game. You kept saying yesterday when you meant 2 days ago. But
yeah.
People, I trust that most of our listeners are in the same mindset as you.
Yeah. So Will Anderson met with the media on Monday. And he talked about some of his new teammates. In fact, two that are going to help him greatly on the defensive line. Let's start with, here's Will Anderson on Danielle Hunter.
Yeah, I haven't got a chance to work with him yet, but it was crazy how everything just took place, because I got a chance to meet him at Pro Bowl. To come to find out, he's with the same agency. So, you know, me and him have been talking back and forth. And, man, he's a great guy. He loves ball. He doesn't want to do anything else but play football. And I know he loves cars. But having a guy like that, a vet in the room like that, who can inspire so many of us, you know, teach us so much stuff, and we can learn from him. He has a lot of great tools, a lot of great ability. He has great leadership. And he just knows what it takes to be one of the greats in this league, man. So I'm very eager to learn from him, to play along beside him, and really just see how this thing goes, man. We're really excited.
I don't think that's lip service either. I think a lot of times young guys, when an old guy comes in, probably say, I can really learn from this guy. Guy comes in and says, yeah, I'm really looking forward to mentoring this younger guy, whatever. And I think like half the time they're just saying it because that's a checkbox on a list, you know, like that feels genuine. Everything with Will Anderson feels genuine to me, but that does feel like, Seth, like, okay, part of the $24 million a year that we're paying Danielle Hunter is an increased percentage chance that we get the most out of Will Anderson as well.
It's a tutelage fee?
Yes. Yeah, it's baked into it. You're getting that for free. Like, you know, rust, like
that,
rust proofing. Yeah, or floor mats.
You know who did that and it worked out pretty well? Was the Scottish. The Scottish were in the Revolutionary War. The majority of people who signed the Declaration of Independence had grown up, you know, most of them were pretty rich dudes. They had grown up with tutors who were Scottish. Remember, Scotland was, you know, had a lot of philosophical ideas about independence and democracy and whatnot.
So they
couldn't get it done over there, but they got it done in America.
I like it.
So likewise, Danielle Hunter, some parts of the freedom took like an extra 100 years.
Sure,
but still,
sure.
But still, well, and then like another 75 years.
But
after
yeah.
That. But still,
yeah.
But right.
Yeah.
The Danielle Hunter is like a Scottish tutor to Will Anderson. He's gonna give all these ideas. you're worried that I'm getting way too far out on a limb.
You're out over your skis right now. I love this.
I am. No. I think
if it all ends with Danielle Hunter wearing a kilt, I'm here for the analogy. That's all. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And Will Anderson, like, honestly, Will Anderson can kill as many Brits as he wants, and it's just fine. He's basically got diplomatic immunity.
There
okay.
You go. Yes. Yes.
You want to kill a Brit? Go for it. You just keep playing football.
That's right.
I think that the thing about Will is that Will will be the first to tell you that he's just getting started on actually learning how to be an NFL pass rusher.
Right.
A lot of it clicked for him midway through last year. But, man, we've seen multiple times now when people bring up like ESPN pass rush win rate, he wants nothing to do with it. Jason Braddock brought it up as a compliment in the press conference the other day, and Will basically said like, "Yeah, thanks, but I don't pay attention to any of that stuff. Like he just wants to get better and win football games." And a lot of it, like he said, at the end of the season, it comes down to sacks. Like, you can make all excuses you want about how QB pressures matter and QB hits, this and that. Will Anderson's like, no, bro, it's about sacks and production, and I'm not there yet where I want to be. So he's going to keep busting his butt to get there. And Danielle Hunter is very much a polished pass rusher who, and this is key, Danielle does an incredible job on like second, third, and fourth pass rush moves. A lot of times in the NFL, the majority of sacks come on second moves.
Yeah.
So it's your counters, it's how you react to a flushed quarterback, all those things. Those are the finer elements of the game that I think Danielle Hunter can be a really good asset to Will Anderson on.
I cannot wait. I cannot wait to watch these two play. And Danico Autry, too. Here's Will Anderson on Danico Autry.
He just brings a type of different juice to the team, you know, especially the position group, man. He's excited to have somebody like that in the group, somebody that can bounce around from the inside to the outside. And it just helps everybody in the room because now teams are like, well, this guy's going to line up right here, this guy's going to line up right here, this guy's going to line up right here. So they have to give an account to everybody on the D-line. So it's really exciting to have a guy like that in the room, man. He's very physical. He plays his butt off. I got a chance to watch him last year go against us, and, man, he's very disruptive. So he's another guy that I can't wait to play alongside of.
Got me excited with those scheme thoughts there, you know?
Oh, with Danico being able to move in and
like disguising things that they're going to do and stuff like that?
I wish he had mentioned about how confusing it is to have both a Danico and a D'Amico.
he seems to be fine with it.
It's not going to be fair to me. Nobody thinks about old Sethers and how he suffers with all of this and these additions.
And there's a Nico on offense, too.
I don't want to even talk about it. Yeah. I can't. Okay. I think with Danico, you interviewed Mark Schlereth yesterday for your podcast, and we're going to play some of that tomorrow. Before your podcast drops.
Yeah.
But you said he was really impressed with Danico Autry.
Big time. Big time, yeah.
What was the word that he used?
He said that he made up an analytic stat on his show in Denver. He does the morning show in Denver on 104.3 The Fan, and his advanced stat that he made up was called Boo, B-O-O. Balls over opponent.
Balls over opponent. That's good. See, that's a good acronym.
Yes. Yeah. And basically
not like
saying,
the fake acronym Swarm. But yeah, that's good. Balls over opponent.
Balls over opponent. And use Danico Autry as the example, which is like this guy, he kills people. You know,
he's got he needs to carry him in a wheelbarrow.
Yes.
Basically, is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Yeah. He is, man. He's got heavy hands and he like enjoys the physical part of the game. He likes There's nothing better than the feeling of like when you're a defensive lineman and you get your hands on an offensive lineman's chest and you get them to a spot where they're kind of they're on their heels and they're kind of bending over backwards at the waist to where you can do whatever you want. Oh. You can dump them on their faces. You can throw them into their buddy's knees.
Yeah.
Like any of those things. Like it's an awesome feeling. And Danico Autry has a lot of those moments. In a lot of ways, it's kind of like hitting a ball. A baseball or a golf ball in the sweet spot.
Yeah.
You almost don't even care where the ball goes after that because it feels so nice.
Feels so good.
Yeah, Danico Autry has a lot of moments where he's just treating like an offensive lineman like a cat treats a mouse.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, okay, I'm going to embarrass you in front of your family now. You cool with that? Oh, you're not? I don't care.
I'm going to ask of what would sound like a very basic question about Danico Autry. There's not a single person I've heard talk about this Danico Autry signing. Like, it's not the greatest thing ever. There's not a single person who I've heard when asked about Danico Autry say anything but, like, overly gushing things. Nick Caserio among them. Nick was very measured in talking about everybody they signed. And then we talk about Danico Autry, and he talks about him like we could clone him and take over the world. Bad MF-er, junkyard dog, dark alley, the whole nine yards. And he's versatile. He can play inside. He can play outside.
Right. Why is
he only a $10 million a year guy?
Because he does all those things that everybody's talking about, and there's a physicality to his game, but it's not like he has the elite athleticism or playmaking ability of a lot of the guys that are genuinely going to get paid. I think this is – I hate that I'm going to make this comparison, but I'm going to do it. If you divorce personality from it, Draymond Green is a good example, you know, of a guy that, all right – Is Draymond Green your classic all-star or what have you? No, but there's a certain element of his grittiness and his ability to be versatile, especially, that he's like one of the ultimate, almost like utility basketball players. But he's such a good utility basketball player that he's elevated himself to the star status. I think like Danico Autry isn't as good relative to football, but he's that type of player.
It makes sense.
He's a genuine playmaker, but he's not going to fill up the box score necessarily.
It makes life easier for guys around him in certain ways, probably, like Draymond does. Yeah, that's a really good analogy.
And then there's a tone-setting element to it there, too, you know?
Yep, absolutely. One more from Will Anderson. This is not a new teammate, but it probably, you know, probably felt new to Will when he got on the field last year. Derek Stingley Jr. had a nice second half to the season. Here's Will Anderson on what Derek Stingley Jr. does for the guys up front.
We benefit a lot. I was telling Sting, I was like, bro, you still want me to play on your side? Because we had got the deal, and we was joking about that. And I said, bro, like, he's unbelievable, bro. And to see him work every day, to see him come in, he's quiet. He doesn't say much. But when you turn the tape on, you just see him, like, everywhere. Having a guy like that in the back, it makes our job so much easier just to go hunt, be free, and be loose. Because it's like, they throw the Stingley, they crazy. So having a guy back there like that, man, it's really a blessing.
You know, it's interesting. I don't know if I've ever heard a defensive lineman talk about being tied to a certain side cornerback. You know, like Will's talking about, you sure you still want me playing on your side? And now I got to know, like, listeners, fill me in on this. It makes sense that it's weird that I've never thought about this before, but that, like, oh, yeah, if Derek's playing on the left side and Will's playing on the left side and Will is in the quarterback's face as he's trying to throw to the right, yeah, that it's going to benefit Stingley. Well, when we saw in that one interception that they had, what, Will Anderson tipped the ball and Derek Stingley reacted to it. I guess that now that I'm saying it out loud, it feels weird that I haven't heard stuff like that talked about more often, but I like that Will Anderson is the one that that first said it. Yeah,
especially since you played. You know what I mean? Like, I figured three years of playing, you would have heard something like that.
Well, there wasn't a single cornerback in the league that was like, hey, let me be sure I'm on Seth. Which side is Seth tilted to at the nose tackle right now? I want to be sure I'm on the left, okay?
Maybe you would have heard it at some point, overheard it.
No. Yeah, I don't. Maybe I haven't. It just didn't register.
Yeah. So that's Will Anderson. Stephon Diggs tweeted yesterday. He was looking for – Stephon Diggs was trolling for cheap meals yesterday. I don't know if he's in Houston or not right now. Have we found out yet if he's at these workouts?
No, and nobody asked at the press conference, I can't complain about because I wasn't there, obviously. So we don't know for sure. I saw footage of Danielle Hunter out doing some kind of workout on the field.
Okay.
Wearing one of the sports bras GPS trackers that they love to wear these days.
Right.
I like to think I'm an advanced, you know, elevated guy, but there's still something a little bit where it just, there's a disconnect sometimes when I see all these guys wearing sports bras.
Yeah.
But yeah, we don't know. So he was he asking for advice for a cheat meal?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, he's asking for cheat meal advice. And then he tweeted something which I can definitely get behind. The whole convince yourself that the healthy food is good because it's good for you is cap.
It's a lie.
Yeah, it said that healthy food is good for you is a lie. So Stephon tells me Stephon Diggs likes himself a good cheeseburger or something like that.
Yeah, do we have now wait a second, though. Can you repeat the whole thing to me?
Sure.
Yeah.
I'll repeat it verbatim. Here we go.
Yeah.
The whole convince yourself that the healthy food is good because it's good for you is cap.
Okay, so like saying convincing yourself that it's tasty because it's good for you. All right, I thought he was going into conspiracy theory mode or something where, you know, like big health industry wants you to believe that Big Macs aren't good for you or something. Yeah. Then everything comes full circle all of a sudden where people are sticking up for McDonald's. Okay, so he cannot convince himself that like, oh no, this tastes good. Hey, this celery tastes awesome because it's good for me.
Right. Well, then like
he's not going to fall for nothing tastes as good as skinny.
But a minute later, he kind of goes back to the middle and says, but I will say some of the food is not half bad. Shoulder shrug emoji.
Mm-hmm.
So he doesn't want to offend any of the people who like healthy food, I suppose. Make up your mind, Stephon Diggs. Jeez.
So he's not saying healthy food is cap. He's just saying that convincing yourself that it tastes good because it's healthy.
Now he's got a specific take at 2:49. This is all within 10 minutes. He was live tweeting some food yesterday, Stephon Diggs. See, do you agree with him on this? The people that say turkey bacon tastes better than actual bacon are delusional? Where are you on turkey products?
I don't think they're delusional. I could see why. You know, depending, especially sometimes it's just. I mean, sometimes you just don't want something that's loaded with fat. It hits different, you know. Yeah. And I think likewise, that's like, it's all about what you learn to like. You know, nobody likes coffee the first time they drink it. Nobody likes beer the first time they drink it.
Yeah.
You acquire that taste over time. So, no, I disagree with Stefan Diggs.
You do? Turkey, yeah. I agree with him on turkey bacon just because of the texture. Turkey sausage I can do. Turkey sausage
is good. I'll tell you what. I've had, because I like to try anything. And I've tried the Beyond Meat a few times.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of people, if you didn't tell them that it was a veggie burger, they might actually prefer the Beyond Meat to a normal burger. It's got kind of a smoky taste to it.
Yeah,
I felt like, you know what it is? I've gotten pretty good at grilling over the years for everything except what should be the simplest and easy thing, which is burgers.
Yeah.
I always overthink it. There's something about a Beyond Meat burger the couple times that I've grilled it where I'm like, well, gosh, I just nailed this thing. And all I did was just follow the instructions.
Very cookable.
But this tastes this is juicy. It pops in your mouth and it's got a slightly smoker feet. If you had told me beforehand that I was going to say that, I'd be like, you're just fooling yourself. Like, nah, I actually like it. It's pretty good.
They're not bad. I like regular burgers better, but they're not bad. I tell you the thing that's good in the Beyond Meat category, the chicken patties are very good.
Yeah.
The breaded chicken patties, they're very, very good.
This is the thing I don't like about the Beyond stuff is that, like, if I'm going to go veggie on something, I want it to feel like I'm eating something genuinely kind of earthy.
Yeah.
Where you look at the ingredients on the Beyond Meat stuff and I'm like, well, this is... No, this is not.
Ansel, we'll just go to Bex.
This is not me being a wannabe crunchy granola type whatsoever. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Bex.
Maybe I should just go eat an actual avocado. Okay.
We went to town at Bex last night. It's right there Bex. Next to our building. It's right there. It shares the parking lot.
It's tough being at your place because you can smell the Bex wafting.
The balcony. Our balcony overlooks Bex Prime.
That is an allure. That is a siren song for your nostrils, man.
Ugh.
There's nothing. Bex is something different.
Yeah.
I don't know how you do it. John,
I don't
frankly,
either.
I'd be in there every day for lunch.
It's tough. It's not
that
easy.
That was one of the first places that Brandy and I went the first year we were in Houston. We went to Bex right there on Kirby, I think.
Yep.
And it was kind of like it was a new experience. We spent the first 5 years in Jacksonville, and it's like, okay, Jacksonville's an awesome place. It's really an awesome place.
I like Jacksonville.
But it's not like a real big city.
No.
You know? It's a collection of suburbs all smashed together.
Yep.
Where, like, we got to Houston, and there were a lot of... We felt like kids getting off the bus for the first time. And, like, the amount of different opportunities and things that there were, but especially on the dining side of things.
Yeah.
We're like, oh, wow. And Bex was one of them. We're like, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
My God. Yeah.
Yeah, man. It is a constant temptation right there. And we gave in last night. Big time.
Well, it doesn't help because they can serve beer there too.
They do beer, beer and wine. They got both of them there now.
They serve wine there.
Well, just like the little bottles, you know, the bottles they can put next to all the beer bottles right there. You know, like they don't bring out. There's not a sommelier or anything like that. It's just the plastic bottles with the screw tops on it. But
right. Yeah,
goes great with a burger. You know,
Jimbo's not coming out with a towel over his forearm explaining today's offerings.
No, Brooks is the manager's name there. He's a big listener to the show, so yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, Brooks. I didn't realize. Okay,
that's okay. Yeah, no, I was just giving him a shout out. That's all good. It's all good. There's probably a Jimbo there as well, I'm sure. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Is Jim Crane the most popular owner, not just in this city, but in all of baseball? Someone who got up in Seth's emails yesterday has a study that seems to indicate as such.
This is a fascinating study.
We will examine next.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Seth, I'm going to let you take the lead on this one because this came into an email mailing list that apparently you're on and I'm not. You got a lot of people doing surveys out there that are hitting you up with things here, right?
Yeah, so I got this. Usually what I'll get is like, hey, the subject says something like, survey finds or research finds that Houston likes its fifth best player 79% more than other teams, or so they try to like hell to scale everything to where you're going. But I found this one interesting, given that it seems pretty remarkable that by a healthy margin, Jim Crane ranked as the most liked MLB owner
in the sport, like not the most popular Houston owner, not like
right,
Crane,
right. Yeah,
V. McNair,
in the sport of baseball,
V. Fertitta, yeah,
like, yeah, in Major League Baseball, yeah,
with his own fan base, right? Like, so they surveyed, what was it, 3,000 Houston Astro or Houstonians, I guess, right? Mm-hmm. And the favorable rating that got him to first place, basically 7 out of 10 Astro fans view Jim Crane favorably.
Yeah. Which is notable. Like, not anybody else was even close to that. His likability score surpassed MLB owners' average by 15%.
It's pretty good.
So he's incredibly likable compared to other MLB owners, almost none of whom I could name for you.
Do you think that, okay, likability is one thing. That's like that feels like a personality thing.
Yeah.
And even with that, I don't know that Jim Crane has, and I'm not saying he's a jerk or anything like that, but he's not like this gregarious personality. He's very businesslike and focused.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
you know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah, it's not like he's out there like an old Rooney giving dollar bills to the orphans
right.
or anything, you know?
Right.
Yeah. He does a lot of nice things, don't get me wrong, but he's just not that same personality.
But let's pretend that likability is actually a baseball thing here, that the likability has to do, and we're going to get to the really funny stat about this in just a second, like the hilarious stat about this survey in a second. But I want to stick with this 7 out of 10 thing. Let's just say it's because of, let's just say that this survey was based on likability is about baseball stuff. Decisions he makes, resources he invests in the team, all the criteria that you would come up with to judge your MLB owner. Do you think his approval rating right now is 70% with that? Like, is it over or under 70% with Astro fans?
I think, okay, given what we're about to tell you, I think that whichever pool of people they used for this study, I think it's still, it might be a little bit below, it might have dropped a little bit, but it's still probably the favorite in sports.
Yeah.
I think there's an identification there with also I think a lot of Astros fans feel like they've been through the wars with Jim Crane because of the being better than everybody else scandal.
That's a good one.
And all of that. It's I think there's a connection between Jim Crane and the fan base that's unique and different. Maybe to every other place except Bob Kraft and the Patriots.
Yeah. I feel like, well, let's give the stat that's really funny about this survey, and then we can go into a little more nuance on Crane. 52% of the Astro supporters surveyed in this confessed to not knowing who Jim Crane is.
Yeah, which was a curious thing. Like,
I'm reading this email you forwarded, and I'm like, this is interesting. I like what you've done here. Yeah, this is good. And then I get to the last one. Half the people didn't know who the guy is.
Sean, how did I send this to you, by the way?
You forwarded the email.
I've been looking for it all day. I deleted it out of my inbox, and I'm looking through my scent, and I can't find anything. I don't have the you have the actual email. I don't have the email any longer.
Yeah, I literally cut and pasted the bullet points into the rundown.
Okay.
Here, so that's
if I could find the damn email, I'd be able to tell you exactly how they explain away that 52% of the people don't actually know what the hell who this person they're expressing their approval for is.
Like, literally, the link just went to a Google spreadsheet that said 52%, 48%. Like, I don't know what
it's science.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know what the.
There's some people that they know how to work a Google spreadsheet and they put those numbers down.
I think, honestly, and this is not meant to be shade at Jim Crane at all. Jim Crane's been an amazing owner for the Astros. They've won two World Series. He's made some decisions in the last couple of years that I think are very questionable when he's gotten more involved in the day to day. I don't think that's unfair to say. I think this survey. A slightly over half the people not knowing who he is in the moment right now probably helps his score. My guess is the people not knowing who Jim Crane is, but they're just giving an approval rating based on how the Astros have done, are probably, my guess is his survey was probably done before the season started, and before they started 6-13, and they go, oh yeah, the Astros are amazing. I wear my Jose Altuve jersey to work every Friday. We're in the ALCS every year. He's got to be amazing. Oddly enough, I feel like the people that follow baseball super closely, who have benefited maybe more from this run of Astros dominance more than anybody else, are probably the most disappointed in Crane right now.
Yeah, you know? Right. Yeah, that's without even looking at anything, you know, a lot of people just, this is a great example of sometimes when people answer a survey question, they're not actually answering the question.
Right.
They're answering based on something else.
That's right.
And this is notoriously like, okay, however you feel about the economy or anything else is also how you feel about the president. Like, there's always like,
yes.
You can find a few different things where
yep.
You either love or hate that person based on something completely, not necessarily completely separate, but you're not... You're not genuinely answering that question that was asked.
Yeah. I'm still thumbs up on Jim Crane. I fear these decisions that he's making are going to be the ultimate undoing of this thing. That's my concern. My concern is this quasi board of directors that he's assembled here to run the team. You know,
you know what it feels like, man. It feels like your boss has a private jet. And he decided to learn how to fly.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden you show up one day for your routine weekly trip that you take with your boss on the private jet with the two hired professional pilots. But your boss is like, hey, I'm flying today. And you're like, awesome. That's so cool.
Yeah.
I can't wait to fly in an airplane with you 40,000 feet in the air.
Right,
with you flying it.
Right. Like, let's let the trained people do this stuff.
Yeah, that's what it feels like. Jim Crane's flying the plane.
Hey, were you confused by Orlando Arcia's home run last night?
I was confused, and then I wasn't, and then I was more confused again.
Yeah. Here's what it sounded like. For those who missed it, Orlando Arcia, you want to describe it, Seth? Like the home
run?
Yeah,
Orlando Arcia hits a home run. It goes out, and it hits the left center. It hits the railing. On as we are looking at it, on the right side of the Crawford box, the left center field railing,
like
there.
Where the Jags backwards towards the bullpen.
And then it wasn't really clear from the broadcast when you first saw it where it went after that, other than that it fell into the field of play. So this is the home run call, and then Todd Kalas's adamant disavowal of the home run.
Here's
so
Orlando.
This is first.
Versus Atlanta people.
Atlanta's broadcast first, and then Todd Kalas and Jeff Blum chiming in afterwards.
Here's Orlando Arcia.
In the air to left. McCormick going back. Still going. Is it gone? Yes. Huh. A solo homer for Orlando Arcia later. And it's 1-0 Atlanta.
Got just enough of it to get it over that yellow line in left field.
This could be a good look. Yeah, that's not a home run.
Yeah, that's a great shot.
That hits the yellow line in play. It has to go beyond the yellow line. Oh, yeah.
But it clearly hit the yellow line. Isn't that what you're looking for?
Absolutely. This is not going to be a home run.
View of the ruling on the field is confirmed. It is a home run.
No, it's not. How's that not in play?
Yes.
So the yellow line is a home run?
So, okay, I'm glad Blum asked that question at the end there, because like a lot of us, I spent time, you know, looking up the Houston ground rules in Houston, the MLB rules and what have you. And what wasn't clear to Kalas, and it got even more confusing after MLB clarified, because then Callis clarified, but then came back again and said, well, wait a second, MLB said that's not exactly what happened. This is what happened. It hit that railing, and as it is with the yellow, the rule in MLB on the yellow line is if it hits the yellow line and goes out of play, then it's a home run. If it hits the yellow line and falls back in, then it's in play. Simple as that. It caromed off that yellow railing, and then like the Houston rule, the ground rules are that they specifically point out that railing.
Yeah.
And then it went up and hit the sign above the viewing area there, yeah, and then fell back into play. So it was a home run, but I feel like a lot of people were either angry and then not angry and then angry again over the fact that that was counted. Obviously, ultimately, it didn't really matter in the grand scheme.
No, it didn't. Like, and they pulled the ground rules up and put them on the – they put a graphic up with the ground rules.
Yeah.
And I remember I had my computer on my lap. I'm kind of, you know, reading stuff and watching the Astros game at the same time, and I look up at the screen. I'm like, ah, that's a lot of words. It's 2 innings ago. They're not going to reverse the home run, you know?
No, but it was one of those things. I ended up on Reddit, on an umpire's thread where they were discussing this type of stuff. So it was one of those, yet another baseball things that seems like it should be simple enough.
Yeah, right, right.
It's somehow made more complex.
Right.
Yeah.
So Callis got understandably agitated, I guess. I mean, ultimately it was a home run, so it was incorrect. But yeah, this is two nights in a row now where Todd Callis has gotten agitated about something.
That's right.
Two nights ago, it was fans doing the wave in the eighth inning of a one-run game.
Going back to my wave comment, if it's a 12-3 game in the eighth, you guys do all the waves you want to. Have a blast. But it's this kind of a game.
You're stirring it up, TK.
I don't want the wave. I don't.
No, lock
this
in.
Has been a great game.
Okay, from a player's perspective, to your point, what you just said, I'll explain it, is if the fans were doing the wave in that situation and told me they will not focus on the game, that's the only thing I'm saying.
That's all I'm saying.
That's what we said.
All right. So Blum and Callis running on a platform, the political party of Blum and Callis running on a platform of ban the wave.
Yeah.
Yeah. At least in close games. He said it was 12-3,
on,
do you, but yeah.
Is that now, and I believe later on he said something. I had missed this on the broadcast, but somebody pointed out that he said he respects C.J. Stroud even more for not participating in the wave.
Me too.
I don't know if that actually happened or if that was a joke or not, because they showed C.J. Stroud, and he, according to this one tweeter yesterday.
Okay. C.J. strikes me as a non-waiver, I think.
No, yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Although, you know, there's a lot of pressure for him to, you know, to have a lot of fun with the audience and everything.
I don't know.
You know, you don't want to let the kids down if the kids are enjoying the wave.
Do you think Callis is cracking a little bit under the weight of a 6-13 start? Like he's starting to get a little loose, a little emotional.
I think he's letting. I think the competitive juices are starting to
good,
flow a little
bit. I'm here for
yeah,
it.
Yeah, the way he just flat out said, no, it is not.
Right.
About that home run.
Yeah.
I don't know if maybe I'm noticing it more because of the Astros situation. I feel like we've gotten a few more moments like that out of Callis this year than we had in the past. He's not, maybe part of it is just simply because he's been here long enough now that he's just super, super comfortable.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And we haven't seen him really cover a team that's struggling like this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, COVID year's the closest thing, but that was a year everybody got a mulligan, you know?
COVID year was weird.
Yeah.
2016, the expectations were not the same whatsoever.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
Oh, no, he came in 2017.
He did. Anyway. I was going to say, I don't know if he was there in 16 or not. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. The Texans are getting a lot of love this offseason. We know that. I have a question. What if Tyler Goodson catches that ball on 4th-and-1 in week 18? Are the Texans viewed the same way they are this offseason? Remember that drop in the Colts game late in the game? If he catches it, is it the same offseason for the Texans? That is next.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in baseball isn't boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, good to be with you, Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610. So week 18, the Texans are in Indianapolis. Playoff spot on the line. Winner goes to the playoffs. Loser goes home. The winner actually wound up winning the division, in this case, the Texans. But the winner would be 10-7, the losers 9-8, and they go home. And it looked like the Texans were on the cusp of losing that football game. 4th-1, Colts driving. This happens.
As big a play as you'll have all season. 4th-1 at the Houston 15. Minshew in the gun. Minshew to throw. Minshew swings it out to the back left side. It's incomplete! And the Texans take over on downs with 1:03 to go in the fourth quarter. What a stop! Colts can't complete it. Texans have it.
What a stop. He dropped it. I love
but
you,
it
Vandy.
Was.
I love
it
you,
was,
Vandy.
It wasn't an unforced error.
No. The pressure got to him. So, look, you are what your record is, 10-7, win the division. But, man, I got into this rabbit hole, Seth, because I was just going back and watching like cut-ups of some of the Texans games last year, and we know that wasn't even during the streak of close games. Remember, there was that spell where they played 8 straight weeks where it went down to the last 30 seconds, and I think – and they got better as the season went on. Ultimately, they were 7-3, I think, in those types of games. So there was some sort of knack this team had for coming up with big plays. And a lot of times it was the defense coming up with big plays at the end of games with stops or Jimmy Ward with an interception against Denver. That particular play in that Colts game, though, is one that you can really, draw a cause and effect because the Colts were driving down the field at that point. Like, it felt inevitable that they were going to get in the end zone. They were moving the ball so well. And Jonathan Taylor, really up until that third down that set up that 4th-1, Jonathan Taylor had been, had been having a pretty good afternoon. The Texans had corralled him a little bit in the fourth quarter. But they were driving. If he catches that ball, Tyler Goodson, and they go on to score a touchdown there, the Texans miss the playoffs and they finish 9-8, which I think you and I would have still been coming in on Monday and saying, hey, still a great season, better than anybody thought. Their total in Vegas was 6 wins. They won 9. We'd be saying all that kind of stuff. But I do wonder, with the way this offseason has gone, like how different factions of NFL people, free agents, the outside world, inside NRG, would be viewing this team if they were 9-8 and didn't make the playoffs, as opposed to the narrative that, hey, this is a 10-7 team that blew out the Browns in a playoff game,
Right. You know what? It's a really good point, Sean, because it's not just the fact that they made the playoffs. Yeah, it's that they ended up looking awesome in a playoff game it might have changed the trajectory of the Browns franchise, depending on how they felt about Joe Flacco, perhaps. It was, that was huge. It wasn't just making the playoffs, it was winning that game.
Yeah.
I think that because in some respects, if you look at the Vikings from the year before, where the Vikings won 13 games with a whole bunch of close victories.
Yes.
But then they lost to Daniel Jones in the playoffs.
That's right.
And I think that became a story of, they made the playoffs, but look at all those close games, and then they got beat by Daniel Jones, and it wasn't like that. That alone, I think, took a lot of shine off that Vikings season, they were in a different quarterback situation. Obviously, they didn't have a young quarterback, but I think people still would have been very bullish on them. It just wouldn't. A lot of the national commentators wouldn't have had the same amount of emotion attached to it. They wouldn't have really watched and seen the Texans at their best versus that Browns game.
Yeah, I think there's a yes, a maybe, and a no when it comes to how would this team still be viewed the way they're viewed as a 10-7 team had they been 9-8 and missed the playoffs. I think to your point, I think the outside world, the Mark Schlereth of the world, I'm bringing him up because I interviewed him yesterday, but the Colin Cowherds of the world, the all the national pundits who are all throwing flowers at the Texans, there's no way they'd be looking at the Texans the same way if they were 9-8 and missed the playoffs as they are now 10-7 and beating the Browns.
In some ways, the scary thing right now is I feel too many people are talking about them as if they've already arrived.
Yes.
They're the hunted now instead of the hunters. No, they D'Amico is the first to tell you, no, they're still very much hunting. And I would tell you, look, you can't lose to the Ravens the way you did in the playoffs and act like you're the hunted. They definitely wouldn't be talking about them that way.
They'd be talking about them a lot, I think, like how people talked about the Lions going into last year. The Lions finished 9-8 and missed the playoffs.
Yeah.
But boy, that season opener against the Chiefs, that's a frisky team right there, you know?
100%. And then also, I think, because what you have there, Tushon, is, you know, CJ missed those last, you know, missed two games near the end of the year. The defense had some really disappointing performances. You don't win, if you don't win that Colts game, they're good. I think a lot of the talk would be about the fact that, like, how is Jonathan Taylor routinely running for 200 yards versus you?
Yep.
Like, this is the two very best games that Jonathan Taylor had last year were versus the Texans defense. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of the defensive blemishes and inconsistencies, which maybe honestly we've probably ignored too much already this offseason, mm-hmm. they had some really bad performances defensively with a lot of blown assignments and poor play. Like, they need to. They need to take more of a step forward defensively. Like, it's just the challenges on defense are greater than whatever the offensive question marks are right now.
So I think the outside world, like the media specifically, I think there's no chance they're looking at the Texans the same way. And keep in mind, like, I'm boiling this down to one drop on fourth and one, but that was the gateway for what allowed the Texans to have that postseason that I think really postseason and win the division, which really stamped them. Do you think free agents, if they were 9-8 and missed the playoffs? I'll use Danielle Hunter as the example because he's the marquee free agent they got.
Right. Like
Stephon Diggs they traded for. And we'll get to how Nick and D'Amico would view this team in just a second. Do you think that free agents would have viewed the Texans, specifically Danielle Hunter, the same way if they'd missed the playoffs last year? Danielle Hunter was at that playoff game. You know, you remember that?
He was
at that playoff game and talked about how impressed he was by the Texans and by the atmosphere at that playoff game.
They were good enough that he left early. That's how good they were.
That's right.
I mean, probably after one of those defensive scores, he just took off up on out of there. And I don't know, maybe he called his agent at that point and said, like, hey, maybe we should think about the Texans. And his agent was, it wouldn't have been because his agent is the same as
Will Anderson.
What's her name? Nicole.
Yeah.
What is it?
I forget. Yeah.
Nicole from Clutch, the Clutch agency.
Yep.
So I think Danielle Hunter might still come just because of the home field connection.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think there's a good chance. And then also just trajectory. I think the fact that D'Amico Ryans the really interesting thing to me has been some of the players that have talked about D'Amico Ryans from really only having seen him on the sideline, I think, both with the 49ers and now with the Texans. They know his resume as defensive coordinator of the 49ers, but they also see him on the sidelines and then whatever else players have said about
mm-hmm.
him. I think there's a big appeal to go play for a guy like D'Amico. Sean, I'll be honest with you. Like, I played for some really good coaches in my time playing football. I never played for a guy quite like D'Amico. I think where there's an edge, yet at the same time, like a real, like, guys love playing football for him. Like, he creates an environment where it's ultra competitive, and yet at the same time, I think guys are having fun doing that, and he strikes that balance. That's appealing, especially if you're coming from a place where, you know, there's fewer and fewer of these guys, but if you're playing for a Belichick or a Coughlin or a Mike Zimmer or somebody else like that, you probably look at D'Amico and you're like, I wonder what it's like on the other side.
Yeah.
I used to wonder that.
Yeah.
I was playing for Tom Coughlin. I'd look over at like Jeff Fisher's teams, and I talked to some of these guys in the offseason. They talk about how laid back and fun it was and everything, and I'm like, feels like this is a different universe you're talking about.
Does not sound like my experience. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think Danielle Hunter and D'Amico Autry and a lot of the defensive guys, Alshire for sure, because he's got the connection with D'Amico.
Sure.
I think that those guys probably still would have come.
Probably.
I don't think the Texans would have had to pay a tax for it. And the excitement over C.J. Stroud would have still been there.
I think so, too. I think so, too. Definitely a different sales pitch that you're coming at them with, but I think so. I'm with you on that.
Remember the Browns playoff game was the one where they had the mic'd up of D'Amico telling Christian Harris he was going to get a pick six.
Yeah, great.
Exactly. Like that, honestly. Oh, yeah, that's right. I made that recruiting tape for Texans free agents.
Yes.
It was D'Amico talking to Christian Harris about where he needed to line up in this look and that Joe Flacco was going to not realize that Christian Harris was lurking there in zone coverage, jump the route, and score six. And then it happened.
I'm telling you, people are not going to like to hear this, but there is part of us that needs to thank the Tennessee Titans for beating the Jags in Week 18, for availing the Texans to that home playoff game. Like, if the Jags win that game, the Jags win the division, and the Texans are off to, I think, probably Buffalo or Kansas City to play a playoff game.
Well, it's okay because you know what? We're thanking two guys who are no longer Titans. We're thanking Derrick Henry and Mike Vrabel.
That's right. That's right. And then we stole two of them so we could thank them in person, Danico Autry and Azeez Al-Shaair.
Boy, talk about weren't there multiple people just adamantly stating that Mike Vrabel's job was safe? Or am I mistaken in that?
I don't remember.
Felt like the insiders in Tennessee were saying, like, pshaw.
No way. Were you surprised?
He'll never get
fired. Were you surprised he got fired? I was mildly surprised he got fired.
I was mildly surprised. I felt like I'd been set up for like believing that, oh, people who know that Vrabel's not going anywhere.
I definitely felt like he's going to get another job, if not in this cycle, in the next. Like, he's going to be one of the top candidates in the next cycle, well, for sure.
The speculation, and I'd say it's just speculation. Let's see. The media said Mike Vrabel would have a job minutes after, minutes before getting fired. The media said Mike Vrabel would have a job minutes after getting fired.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there was a lot of speculation that Vrabel, kind of like Bill O'Brien reportedly was trying to do a few years before he actually got fired, was that maybe Vrabel was angling for that Patriots job.
Get up and out and then
he just assumed that he was going to. I don't know. This is the thing. I don't think there's a chance in hell that Vrabel didn't know what the setup was in New England.
Right.
Because it was known in New England that Gerard Mayo was already basically the head coach in waiting. So, yeah, Vrabel knew that. That couldn't have blindsided him.
Let me bounce this last one off of you. We're talking about the Texans and what if the Colts convert that 4th-and-1 in Week 18 and go on to win that game. How are the Texans being viewed if they were 9-8 and missed the playoffs? Do you think that D'Amico Ryans and Nick Caserio attack this offseason with the exact same aggressiveness and ferocity if this team didn't make the playoffs and win a playoff game last year? If it were a 9-8 non-playoff team, do they execute the exact, or try to at least, because some of it's free agency where you got to sell the guys, but they try to execute that exact same playbook to improve this football team?
I think they would.
I do too.
And you want to believe that they're not going to be affected by just, you know, like the outcome of one game or one play can make way big. Like, you'd like to think, oh yeah, they know that they're that they're biased in favor of the outcomes and all that, so they would worry. I think it's just obvious that they're looking at, the way Nick is looking at this is that CJ's on his rookie quarterback window.
Yes,
and the Danielle Hunter contract, the Stephon Diggs 1 year deal, like this is now textbook. Hey, you've got a quarterback and his rookie window, but we don't want to be in the same position that the Dolphins are in, where the Dolphins spent money heavily while their quarterback was in his rookie contract window, but now all of a sudden they got to start releasing dudes and saying goodbye to people. So let's just spend heavily on short-term veterans right now. Just about every damn one of them was in his 30s that they signed, with the thought that we develop draft picks, develop younger players, and develop C.J. Stroud. So by the time we pay C.J. Stroud, he's a guy that can genuinely make the 10 guys around him better, and not to mention make it easier for the defense, too.
Yeah.
Because if the offense can stay on the field, it's that much easier for your defense.
I think two things. I think, one, there's no way a process-driven GM like Nick Caserio would view any difference in how aggressive he needs to be with a 10-7 season versus a 9-8 season. Like, the process was working to a degree I think he liked. And number two, if they missed the playoffs, I think they would feel the same level of urgency to make the postseason that they're feeling now to get into Super Bowl contention.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
If anything, yeah.
There's a next step in all this stuff.
Right, yeah. Like, if you had to perfectly engineer it, they might look at it and say, yeah, you know what? If anything, man, these guys are getting a little too high on the hog. I wish they had a little better dose of humility. That's why I very much look at the bludgeoning the Texans took in Baltimore as a blessing and not a curse. Mm-hmm. Just because if you're going to lose, have something that leaves a bitter taste in your mouth,
yep.
You know, something that drives you a little bit. So you had a lot of success, but you got a very firm reminder that there's a lot of work left to be done. I'm glad that it worked out that way.
Yep.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.